The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hi, this is Liz Elliott from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from Oprah Magazine, June 2019, Volume 20, Number 6. This is the second of four installments of the June issue. The front cover this month pictures three Oprahs against a bright white background, and each Oprah is in the same pose, exactly the same pose, with a different colored dress. The first one, she is in a long sleeve, V-neck, knee-length yellow dress with a fitted top and a very full skirt. She's got her hands holding the hem of the skirt, flouncing it outwards as she walks forward. It's bright yellow and it's paired with orange pumps. The second Oprah has the same dress on, same pose. She is in an orange dress with coral pumps. And the final Oprah, same dress, same pose, in a bright coral dress with yellow pumps. She's pictured against that bright white background. And in the top left corner, there's a big rectangle. And it has a gradient color to it, starting with yellow, moving into orange, and finally into coral. And against that rectangle is the big Oprah logo, a big white O, almost in a perfect circle, with an oval opening in the center. And the quote on the front of the June issue is, "Let every step you take move you forward." And now we'll take a look at the Live Your Best Life section, and we'll begin with The World According to Gail. Her suggestions on what we should stream, watch, visit, eat, and shop for. And we'll begin with her watch suggestion. There's a big picture of Gail in a bright yellow dress with yellow sunglasses on, and she's got her arm around Taron Egerton. And it says, British actor Taron Egerton chose to sing Elton John's Your Song when he auditioned for drama school. 10 years later, he's playing the larger-than-life icon in Rocket Man. Dreams come true, Taron reports. The film captures Sir Elton John's extremely colorful world. The flashy eyewear, the huge hits, the volatile ups and downs of his career. It's part fantasy, part reality, and 100% Elton. On May 31st, prepare for liftoff. Moving to the visit section of The World According to Gail, there's a picture of the inside of a building, several floors, and it's wide open, and there's walkways and stairwells and sort of a honeycomb shape. It reads, New York City always has a new architectural wonder everyone goes Instagram crazy for. This year, it's the Vessel at Hudson Yards. The latter is a glitzy shopping center on the city's west side, while the former is a spiral tower made of 154 connected staircases. The Vessel looks like a honeycomb, minus any bees, and it couldn't offer a bad view of New York City if it tried. It's an extraordinary landmark, worth the climb. Moving to shop, there's a yellow, heart-shaped handbag that's sitting in front of a fuchsia round woven bag. It's sort of a basket pattern, but it's very sheer and it has a looped handle. It reads, if I see a bright color, my head turns. So when these woven bags arrived in the O offices, I had to know who made them and where they came from. Into the Woods was created by Catherine Woods after a trip with her mom to Bali. Not only do I love the colors and shapes, but I also appreciate that many of the bags are see-through. That encourages me to keep things tidy inside. They're great accessories for a garden party or even the Veuve Clicquot Polo Classic in New Jersey, where I'll rock the yellow heart-shaped design this summer. $240 each into-thewoods.com. And moving to the left side of the page in the bottom left corner, there are some cookies, small, crunchy, and round that resemble Oreos in shape. And it reads, you know what's sweet? These vanilla cookies dipped in birthday cake flavored white chocolate. The delicious biscuits from Saxon Chocolates might resemble Oreos, but they taste sweeter, creamier, and lighter. In fact, they're so airy that I gobbled up 3 before realizing I could have stopped at 1. Oh well. $39.50 for 12. TotallyChocolate.com. And finally, at the top left-hand side of the page, there is a picture of a street scene. The majority of the picture is taken up by protesters, and in the side of the picture, there's a young man in a trench coat. It reads, when a project has a producer named Oprah and a director named Ava DuVernay, you know I'm sold. The duo's latest collaboration, When They See Us, out May 31st, a Netflix series about the terrible true story of 5 teens of color wrongly convicted of beating and raping a woman in Central Park in 1989. 12 years passed before DNA evidence finally cleared the Central Park 5 of the crime. Now Ava is giving us the real deal and getting it right the first time. And the next part of our Live Your Best to Life section is the high five, a whole handful of things to cheer about this month. And beginning in the top left-hand part of the page, there's a picture of a giant moon model and 5 or 6 children in front of it, and it reads, Stellar Luna. Thanks to the Museum of the Moon, you can meet our night sky's brightest object right here on Earth. Using NASA-captured images, artist Luke Jerram has created 10 awe-inducing 20 to 33-foot replicas of the moon to take on tour around the globe. Track the celestial sculpture's approach to your orbit at my-moon.org. The next picture on the right-hand side of the page is an iPhone and 2 people in the middle of a FaceTime conversation, and it reads, Now we're talking. Whether you're an Amharic speaker visiting the ER in Tampa, or an Iranian refugee grocery shopping in Omaha, linguistic support might be closer than you think. Tarjimly is a nonprofit with a free app that connects immigrants and asylum seekers with multilingual volunteers via live chat. To date, it's kept more than 17,000 people from getting lost in translation. So dust off your Swahili or Serbian and join the Foreign Language Legion at tarjimly.ly. Moving down to the bottom of the page, we see a happy, smiling baby at the bottom with a partial right arm, and it's holding a doll with a partial right arm as well. And it reads, Toy Stories. Children with physical differences don't always get to see themselves in the Cabbage Patch Kids and American Girls of the world. Enter Amy Jandrzejewicz, a former pediatric oncology social worker whose company, A Doll Like Me, has created more than 350 cuddly friends with scars, birthmarks, and other differences, because every little one deserves an adorable mini-me. You can find those at adolllikeme.com. Our next picture is a fire truck with firemen all around it in yoga poses and a yoga teacher out in the front. And it reads, Warrior Pose. Namaste, meet 911. Yoga for first responders teaches firefighters, police officers, and EMTs who suffer from higher rates of depression and PTSD, everything from sun salutations to meditation. The program, launched by yoga instructor Olivia Mead and now available across the country, is free for public servants who confront danger daily to help them find balance on and off the mat, yogaforfirstresponders.org. And the final picture is a kitty in a little tent, a lifelike tent that's cat-sized, and it reads Pitch Perfect. Here's a happy hideaway both your feline and your Instagram followers will be wild about. Cat Camp, a pet-centric design studio in Australia, specializes in colorful miniature shelters modeled after the real deal, right down to the fiberglass poles and the zippered entrance. Just don't call them pup tents. You can find those at catcamp.co. And that is the high five for June 2019. And in the last part of the Live Your Best Life section is my best life interview with Samira Wiley. The right-hand side of the page is taken up with a picture of Samira Wiley, and she's wearing a form-fitted knee-length dress with a bright tropical print, and it has a black belt and black straps at the shoulders, and it's paired with a pair of red pumps, strappy sandals with an ankle strap and straps across the toe. And the quote reads, "Wherever I go, I need to work out. Expending energy gives me energy, so I don't do restful vacations or yoga." Now moving to the beginning of the text, it reads, "Why we love her. For the Juilliard graduate's tough yet tender portrayal on Orange is the New Black. What she's up to. Starring as Moira in Hulu's dystopian fever dream, The Handmaid's Tale, returning for its third season, June 5th. What she can't live without. Shrimp scampi with angel hair pasta. I grew up on the kind that came in frozen bulk bags, and I thought it was the most decadent thing. I could have amazing shrimp scampi at an upscale restaurant and still think, this ain't Costco's. My parents. They're pastors, and their Baptist church was one of the first in Washington, D.C. to perform unions for LGBT couples before same-sex marriage was legal. They lost half their congregation because of that. I go to them for everything because they follow their moral compass. A smile. I always try to leave my house with one on my face. It helps me remember that everything will be okay. Also, my blood sugar machine. I'm diabetic and trying not to die out on the streets. My OITNB crew. For most of the cast, this was their first real TV job. It was such a comfort to know we were figuring things out at the same time. We go to Daniel Brooks's house just to chat, drink wine, and play games, and those sessions taught me so much. If I'd been a newbie on that show with all those veteran actors, I would have exploded. Self-worth. I'm a black, gay woman whose family instilled in her an unwavering sense of pride. But there are many girls like me who don't have that. So I'm on a mission to gift that to people with my three check marks, too. And now, let's eat. The front page of the Let's Eat section is a bright white background, and the entire page is taken up with a sliced pineapple. And it reads, "Its prickly exterior houses sweet as honey flesh that will turn nearly any recipe into a tropical treasure. Because they were hard to come by, pineapples were considered a status symbol in Central America." Now moving to the recipes. Our first recipe is for spicy Hawaiian pineapple garlic shrimp. It makes 4 servings and it should take around 20 minutes to cook. The ingredients are 2/3 cup of all-purpose flour, 1 teaspoon of sea salt, 1/2 teaspoon of ground black pepper, 1 teaspoon smoked paprika, 1/2 teaspoon of cayenne pepper, 2 pounds or 20 to 30 wild caught shrimp deveined, 2 large bulbs, 20 to 30 cloves of garlic peeled, 1.5 sticks unsalted butter divided, 3 cups diced pineapple, 1/2 cup Hawaiian chili pepper water or hot sauce divided, plus more for serving. 2 tablespoons lemon juice, sticky rice, green salad, pineapple wedges, lemon wedges, and chopped scallions for serving. Step 1. In a large bowl, whisk together flour, salt, black pepper, paprika, and cayenne. Add shrimp, a few at a time, coating well with the flour mixture. Set aside. Step 2. In a food processor or with a knife, mince garlic. Step 3. In a large skillet over medium heat, melt 4 tablespoons butter. Add pineapple and 2 tablespoons chili pepper water. Sauté until pineapple starts to soften, about 5 minutes. Then remove from pan and set aside. Add 4 more tablespoons butter, 2 more tablespoons chili pepper water, and half of the shrimp in a single layer. Cook 1 to 2 minutes, then flip. Add half the garlic, lemon juice, and pineapple. Cook until shrimp are opaque, 2 to 3 minutes more. Remove shrimp-pineapple mixture and set aside. Repeat with remaining shrimp, garlic, lemon juice, and pineapple. Add 2 tablespoons butter and more chili pepper water if necessary. Step 4. To skillet, add remaining 2 tablespoons butter and 1/4 cup chili pepper water. Cook until butter is foamy, scraping up garlic bits left in pan. Step 5. Divide shrimp among 4 bowls. Pour remaining pan sauce over top and serve with scoops of sticky rice, a side of green salad, scallions, pineapple wedges, a lemon wedge, and more chili pepper water for extra heat if desired. On the right-hand side of the page, there's a column of facts about the pineapple, and it reads, "No wonder it's the life of the luau. Pineapple succulents can enliven everything from seared meats to desserts. And 1 cup of the show-stopping topper of upside-down cakes offers your entire daily dose of vitamin C to boot. You can't judge this fruit by its color. Both green and yellow pineapples can be ripe. Instead, look for bright leaves and a firm fruit that yields slightly to your squeeze. Once you remove its leafy top, place your pineapple upside down on a cutting board for half an hour before coring and slicing. The juice that normally accumulates at the base will be distributed throughout the fruit, making for a plumper, sweeter treat. And finally, fresh pineapple contains bromelain, an enzyme mixture that breaks down protein. That makes pureed or juiced pineapple an ideal marinade ingredient for tenderizing meat and fish." The next page of our pineapple article has a bright white background, and sprinkled all over the page are little wedges of pineapple, and they seem to be drizzled with chocolate. And the recipe is dark chocolate drizzled pineapple with toasted coconut and sea salt. Mix 16 to 20 pieces, and the total time should be about 10 minutes. The ingredients are 1 large pineapple, 3 ounces dark chocolate with coconut or other dark chocolate, 1 teaspoon coconut oil, 1/2 cup toasted coconut flakes, and 1 tablespoon of flaky sea salt. Step 1. Cut off top and bottom of pineapple. Slice into 1/2 to 1 inch thick discs and slice each disc into 4 wedges. Place wedges on a tray lined with waxed paper. Step 2. In a microwave-safe bowl, combine chocolate and coconut oil, then melt in 15-second intervals, stirring between each. Drizzle over wedges and sprinkle with toasted coconut and sea salt. Chill for 10 minutes to set chocolate before serving. And a little side note says, good to know. No such thing as too much chocolate in your cookbook. You can also dip the pineapple wedges into 5 ounces of melted chocolate before topping. And on that sweet note, we'll wrap up our look at the Let's Eat section for June. And now we'll head to the Feeling Good section. The front page is covered in a pink background, and the center of the page has a cartoon picture of a bullseye and a woman in a black dress with a sad expression standing in the center of the bullseye. She's all alone and her arms are crossed. And it is the background illustration for a story entitled The Trouble with Lime. Why can't we hit the target with diagnosis and treatment? And there's a little side caption that reads, an estimated 300,000 people in the U.S. are diagnosed with Lyme disease each year. Debbie Skogman thought she'd found her dream house. It was in the Hudson Valley, near her favorite place to hike and steps from New York's scenic Minnewaska State Park. But after moving there in 2010, the now 42-year-old early childhood educator soon learned that her little piece of heaven was also a haven for ticks. Skogman was, as she always had been, careful about walking in the woods, using natural repellents, wearing high boots and thick underbrush, checking her body and clothing for ticks, and scanning her skin for the bullseye rash that is the telltale sign of Lyme. But that wasn't enough. Ticks still managed to get inside her house, and a few times she even had to pull the little bloodsuckers off her skin. It's so gross when they're stuck to you, she says. Yet, she never spotted a rash. In late 2011, Skogman developed a persistent fever, chills, and body aches so intense that she could barely crawl from her bedroom to the bathroom. She went to urgent care, then the ER, and followed up with a family physician. Her Lyme test came back negative. 3 years later, she was bitten again, but this time, bullseye, on her stomach. To her relief, an answer, finally, and dismay, why did it take so long? Skogman tested positive for Lyme, as well as Rocky Mountain spotted fever and anaplasmosis. 2 months of oral antibiotics did nothing to ease her symptoms. She was referred to a Lyme specialist who did additional tests, diagnosed her with at least one other tick-borne disease, and eventually put her on IV antibiotics for an hour each day. After 7 months of this new treatment, her blood sugar spiked, and the specialist took her off the medication. She wasn't cured. She was only marginally better, but her treatment had run its course. Since the late 1990s, the tally of reported cases of Lyme disease in the U.S. has tripled, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and an estimated 300,000 people are diagnosed each year. We know that the Lyme disease bacterium is spread by infected black-leg ticks. Most bites in the U.S. occur between May and July, and the number of ticks is increasing, likely due to longer summers and rising populations of tick-friendly white-tailed deer. Yet, even as we've learned more about transmission, our understanding of how best to treat Lyme seems to have stalled. In 70 to 80% of cases, people who have been bitten by an infected tick develop that bullseye rash, technically called an arrhythmia migrans, in a week or so. Sometimes it takes as long as a month. They may also experience headaches, fever, chills, fatigue, muscle and joint aches, or swollen lymph nodes. In the most straightforward scenario, they go to a doctor who confirms that they have Lyme by looking at the rash, and he or she prescribes a short course of antibiotics like doxycycline or amoxicillin to kill the bacteria. The immune system eradicates the infection. The symptoms disappear and the patient is cured, or at least until the next tick bite. Unfortunately, though, not everyone sees a rash. Many people are still unfamiliar with Lyme, so they may not consider it was the cause of their symptoms, which, confusingly, resemble those of a myriad of other illnesses, from the flu to autoimmune disorders. And doctors don't always run tests for Lyme. Even when they do, the main diagnostic tools, enzyme immunoassays, ELISA and ELFA, and immunoblot tests like the Western blot, aren't clear-cut and sometimes have false positives. What's more, certain antibodies against Lyme disease bacteria take time to develop, so tests may come back negative until a patient has been infected for 4 to 6 weeks. While diagnosing Lyme might be tricky, treating it has become downright controversial. Experts agree with the established protocol of starting with an antibiotic, but the amount, the length of treatment, and the effectiveness are all up for debate. According to the Infectious Diseases Society of America, 2 to 4 weeks of antibiotics should kill the bacteria in all but the rarest situations. Early Lyme disease essentially always responds to treatment, says Ross McKinney, MD, Chief Scientific Officer for the Association of American Medical Colleges. The trick, of course, is diagnosing and treating it within 2 to 3 weeks of a bite. And the longer a patient has untreated Lyme, the more likely the symptoms will worsen. Says McKinney, when Lyme isn't caught until later, that can lead to cardiac damage and neurological problems that may not completely resolve. Research indicates 10 to 20% of patients suffer from symptoms that persist after treatment. This is called post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome, or PTLDS. It's characterized by the symptoms Scoggin had, as well as fuzzy thinking. You may have heard the term chronic Lyme, but because the phrase also has been employed by symptomatic people who have no evidence of current or past infection, many experts in the field recommend dropping it. For PTLDS patients, there is no standardized therapy. Physicians treating Lyme may extend the antibiotic regimen beyond 4 weeks if symptoms haven't abated or if they go away in return. Reinstituting antibiotic therapy is the best we have to offer right now to control symptoms and prevent progressive deterioration, says Kinnick Langner, MD, a physician in Pawling, New York, who's been treating patients for tick-borne illnesses since the late 1980s. He adds, "To my mind, this is often just a holding action until medical science has identified or developed more effective means of treatment, which I and many others feel is definitely possible and feasible." Antibiotics can have unpleasant side effects, including nausea, diarrhea, and fungal infections of the mouth, digestive tract, or vagina. In addition, prolonged use of them can cause imbalances in the patient's natural bacteria flora that can lead to infection or other maladies. More important, there's no scientific evidence that antibiotics have any benefit after 4 weeks. The mainstream belief among experts is that the Lyme organisms are dead, but an immune reaction of the same type is producing the symptoms, which are pretty universally accepted as real, McKinney says. It's less likely a persistence of bacteria than a persistence of symptoms. In other words, time for a new strategy. But when it comes to PTLDS, admits McKinney, we don't have an effective treatment. Patients are on their own, facing a multitude of dubious-sounding options. More than 30 alternative therapies have been marketed to self-treat Lyme, including herbal medicine, bee venom, oxygen masks, pills prescribed off-label, stem cell transplantation, and supplements like vitamin D, vitamin B complex, and magnesium. However, there's no good research to support the efficacy of any of these treatments, and some may even be harmful. While Scoggin has found relief with herbal medicines like cat's claw and Japanese knotweed, she continues to experience dizziness, joint aches, and persistent fatigue. Just 2 hours of work may exhaust her to the point she requires a 4-hour nap. "I can barely get to my job," she says. "I don't do anything with my 4 kids. I'm in misery and pain all the time." In some cases, insurance companies cover antibiotics for diagnosed patients for only the ISDA-approved 4-week period. They may not cover alternative treatments at all. In her fight against Lyme, Skogman estimates she's spent between $50,000 and $70,000. Money she amassed by borrowing from family, selling off jewelry and other heirlooms, and setting up a GoFundMe campaign. If there's a bright spot in the Lyme story, it's that patients, feeling neglected by experts, are coming together to advocate for themselves. They connect through social media to empathize, share treatment advice, and recommend Lyme-literate doctors. The Facebook group Women in Lyme Disease was started by Katrina Rabel, an environmental consultant who knows the misery of dealing with the illness. While Rabel's Lyme symptoms were mostly helped by extended courses of antibiotics, several kinds, in fact, she and her family spent $35,000 on blood work, lab tests, and doctor's appointments not covered by insurance. After volunteering with Lyme support groups for 3 years, she teamed up with a friend and fellow Lyme sufferer to launch the group, which has now nearly 18,000 members. She says, "I just wanted women to have a safe place they could go to share very personal information about how Lyme was affecting them and not have to worry about feeling vulnerable or embarrassed." Thanks in large part to patient advocacy, the Department of Health and Human Services established a working group in 2016 to look at federal efforts to address tick-borne diseases and present actionable recommendations. This enables patients, family members, advocates, and physicians to sit at the same table with government agencies, says Patricia V. Smith, president of the Lyme Disease Association and member of the working group. Researchers can discuss what they're seeing in the lab. Doctors can describe how they diagnose a patient without a definitive test and how they prescribe treatment. Patients can talk about the direct impact the disease has had on their lives. The group recently submitted the first of its biennial reports to Congress. Says Smith, "We're hoping it will finally cause Congress to take action to alleviate the suffering of patients with Lyme." Next in Feeling Good, migraine myths. What if everything you know about horrible head pain was wrong? Migraine is the fourth most prevalent disease in the world, but not many people realize it. In fact, there's a lot that even longtime sufferers may not know about this condition. Let's do a reality check. Myth: migraines are caused by dysfunctional blood vessels in the brain. Truth: while this was the accepted idea for decades, experts recently developed a more nuanced theory. Migraines likely result from dysfunction in the brainstem centers that regulate blood vessels and pain sensation. People prone to migraines have a hyperactive brain that's uber sensitive to triggers such as the smell of perfume, a lack of sleep, or changes in the weather. I compare it to a boxer who's always sparring and ready to throw a punch, says Cynthia E. Armand, M.D., associate professor of neurology at Albert Einstein College of Medicine. A trigger sets off a wave of brain activity, exciting thousands of neurons. This can lead to a series of changes in the brain involving pain signaling, inflammation, and alterations in blood vessel tone. Myth: a migraine is just a bad headache. Truth: any migraineur, as patients are called, can tell you the agony isn't always something you can push through or ignore. Some can't even brush their hair or get out of bed because of the throbbing pain, which can be felt in the side, back, or front of the head, or directly behind the eye, is so intense. And a debilitating headache isn't the only symptom. Migraines are accompanied by nausea, vomiting, sensitivity to light or sound, or all of the above. If not dealt with, a migraine can last from 4 to 72 hours, occasionally even longer. Myth: migraines don't warrant a trip to the doctor. Truth. In some cases, infrequent migraines can become chronic and then untreatable. And one of the risk factors that moves you along that line quickly is not dealing with the migraine, says Armand. Myth. If your parent suffers from migraines, you're doomed to get them too. Truth. Migraine susceptibility has a lot to do with genetics, but there's no discernible pattern. It's unclear whether genes also influence which triggers we respond to, but experts do know that one isn't always enough to cause a migraine. Triggers can often be stacked, says Susan Broner, MD, medical director of the Weill Cornell Medicine Headache Program. In other words, while sleeping poorly may lead to a migraine, a rough night plus a stressful day plus a glass of Merlot almost definitely will. So if you do inherit migraines, you may be able to come up with your own unique strategies to stave them off. Myth: strong prescription meds are the only way to avoid migraines. Truth: the ideal prevention is to minimize triggers, says Robert Duarte, MD, neuroscientist and director of the Pain Center at Northwell Health. He recommends keeping a headache diary. If you can identify the specific things that bring on your pain, you can steer clear of them. The excitable migraine brain behaves best on a schedule, so try getting sufficient sleep, exercising regularly, staying hydrated and eating small, frequent meals at the same times every day. Of course, some triggers, like the hormonal changes surrounding your period, are impossible to avoid. If you have migraines 15 or more days a month, your doctor can prescribe preventative meds that calm the brain so it's less likely to be provoked. Myth. There haven't been any exciting developments in migraine research recently. Truth. This was the case until last year. Before then, the only options for keeping migraines at bay were meds for depression, seizures, high blood pressure, and other conditions, all of which came with the risk of significant side effects. Anti-inflammatories like ibuprofen and aspirin can also help, but taking them more than a couple times per week can actually cause rebound migraines. In May 2018, the FDA began approving a game-changing class of drugs aimed at preventing the headaches by blocking CGRP, a pain-intensifying substance released during a migraine. They can be self-injected monthly or quarterly, and besides some constipation or pain from the needle, side effects have been rare. Finally, some good news for migraine sufferers. Now, moving to the beautiful section, we read a story called Reef Madness. First came the reports that sunscreen was killing coral. Then local governments started outlawing certain UV shielding ingredients. Now, some experts say in other research reviewed by lawmakers, Italian scientist Roberto Denavoro, PhD, and his colleagues found that after they dropped coral branch tips into plastic bags filled with oxybenzene and three other UV filters, the corals bleached as well as developed disease. As some experts are quick to point out, however, these experiments aren't replicating real-world conditions. Sunscreen washing off a human is very different from applying it to coral in a lab, notes Terry Hughes, PhD, one of the world's leading coral reef ecologists and a professor at James Cook University in Australia. What's more, the lab corals generally faced higher doses than what their ocean counterparts likely encounter, as estimated by the limited data on oxybenzone in reef waters. The question is whether the concentrations found in the environment are also having this impact, and we're nowhere near finding that answer, says Aaron Muller, PhD, science director at the Elizabeth Moore International Center for Coral Reef Research and Restoration in Sarasota, Florida. Hughes, Muller, and nearly every other marine scientist in the world are confident that we already know the greatest global threat to coral, the rise in ocean temperatures due to climate change. The biggest recent bleaching events happened in record high water temperatures, and severe bleaching has struck more than just the reef areas visited by lotion-lathered swimmers. We could shoot all the world's sunscreen into space, and climate change is still going to kill off coral reefs if we don't stop it, says Simon Donner, PhD, a professor of climatology at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Some dermatologists worry that if other places follow Hawaii's lead, our health will be at risk. I fear limiting sunscreen options for Americans will lead to an increase in skin cancer, says Terry Cronin, MD, a dermatologist in Melbourne, Florida. Brands can work only with the UV filters the FDA has approved, and the agency hasn't authorized the use of a new one in 20 years. It's hard for manufacturers to replace oxybenzone and have a good UVA and UVB protection, says Harry Lim, MD, a dermatologist in Detroit, and former president of the American Academy of Dermatology. Could we all just switch to products touted as reef-safe? Unfortunately, that's a fairly meaningless term because no one is regulating it, says Mueller. Plus, the formulas are typically mineral sunscreens with zinc oxide and titanium dioxide. And a few lab studies, just as real-world inconclusive as those done on oxybenzone, have found that nanoparticles of zinc can bleach coral too. And while some reef-safe products claim to use non-nanozinc, there is no agreed-upon definition of what that means. Additionally, Cronin says many people dislike these formulas because they have a reputation for leaving behind a chalky residue, especially on darker skin. He worries that people will skip sunscreen altogether if it's mineral or bust. The bottom line, though insufficient evidence of harm isn't evidence of no harm, for now, there's no clear-cut proof that beachgoer sunscreen is harming reefs. Adds Karis Mitchell-Moore, Ph.D., a professor at the University of Maryland's Chesapeake Biological Laboratory. I'm all for banning anything that is known to pollute the environment, but we need to take a step back and see what the possible repercussions are first. To help minimize eco-concerns, you can reduce the amount of sunscreen you use, and, therefore, how much could potentially wash off into our oceans, and by wearing sun-protective clothing when swimming. And whichever formula you're comfortable with, chemical or mineral, pick one with an SPF of at least 30 and apply often. Now we move to a story entitled Serving Them Right. The Kentucky Restaurateurs Helping Staffers Reclaim Their Lives from Addiction. One sunny day in the fall of 2017, Jared Thornton was half-heartedly slapping caramel sauce on cinnamon rolls when his boss, Rob Perez, remarked that the pastries were short on pecans. Thornton, now 35, got defensive, saying, "I didn't make the topping, I just put it on the roll." He then braced himself to get fired. One more rung down the ladder of self-sabotage. He'd gone from running his own web development company to losing custody of his son, to briefly being homeless since he couldn't pay rent, to relapsing with alcohol every 30 days during a string of recovery attempts. But Perez surprised him by saying, "I know you have potential, but you can't act like this if you want the other kids on the playground to push you on the swing." Thornton, who had a tumultuous childhood and first tried crack cocaine at age 12, fled to the bathroom and cried. "Instead of letting me go," Thornton said, "he challenged me to stick with this." This is Deviate Kitchen, a casual eatery Perez and his wife, Diane, opened in Lexington, Kentucky in 2017. All but one of its 24 employees are recovering from addiction. The service industry can be a breeding ground for risky behavior. The combination of youthful staff, flexible schedule, late hours, and access or proximity to drugs and alcohol creates a perfect environment for addiction to begin, says Rob. The couple, who have a 19-year-old daughter and a 13-year-old son, have seen the connection firsthand. In 2013, they discovered that a server was using heroin in the women's restroom at one of their three successful restaurants in Lexington. 3 years later, a cook fatally overdosed on opioids. They tallied up 13 employees who had died from addiction throughout their 10 years in the business. I remembered visiting a cafe in Cincinnati that employed people to get them off the street, and I told Rob that we should do something like that, Diane says. Rob, a recovering alcoholic who's been sober since 1990, had reservations. But Diane was determined and even arranged a police ride-along through parts of Lexington where street corners were dotted with people looking to fund their next drug fix through prostitution. She wanted to remind him of the desperation involved in addiction and how much support is needed to overcome it. Rob came around, and the two partnered with residential rehab facilities to find and hire staff in recovery. They created policies aimed at transforming the restaurant environment from enabling to empowering, paying employees more than they'd make at a local chain to help with treatment costs and boost self-esteem, adding tips to paychecks to eliminate the temptation of buying drugs with cash, serving only breakfast and lunch to leave evenings free for support groups, and hosting workshops on topics from mindfulness to expunging criminal records. Deviate is now a top-rated restaurant. Some patrons enjoy its veggie curry tacos, unaware of its social purpose, but many others are there for the mission as much as the menu. Along with support from Rob, Diane, and their coworkers, employees feel the community believes in them, which is incredibly powerful, says Tanya Jernigan, clinical director of Chrysalis House, a women's treatment center in Lexington. Deviate is about much more than a steady job. It's created a space in the world for people in recovery, showing them their lives matter and they can still do important things. There's a quote from one of the employees on the side of the page that says, "They don't have to do this. They're living the American dream with a family and successful restaurants, and they've chosen to work with us." And now we'll move to a story entitled Easy Breezy from the Beautiful section. In the top left-hand corner, there's a picture of a woman on a beach. She's smiling, and she has long, blonde, curly hair blowing in the breeze. And the text reads, "Let's face it, humidity happens. Looking fresh-faced and pulled together can be a tall order this time of year, but fortunately, with just a few products, it is possible. Check out these sunny essentials." Perspiration around the hairline can cause fine strands to go flat. Soak it all up with a volumizing dry shampoo. A deodorant that keeps your coworkers from scrunching their noses is essential. One that also pampers your skin with sage and green tea is extra special. Pretty pastels for your eyes and nails are the season's superstars. And for a sun-kissed glow without the UV damage, try an enzyme-rich peel to reveal radiant, healthy skin, and opt for a blush and highlight stick that will deliver eye-catching color. And now I'll describe all of the items that they're talking about. The first one is a white, long tube. It looks like a double-ended lipstick tube. And on one side, there is a pearly, brownish contour stick, and the other side has a rosy, pearly blush. The caption beside it reads, "Clarins Glow to Go Blush and Highlighter Duo in Golden Peach. $32, Clarins.com. Below that is a golden compact, and inside of it is 3 eyeshadows, and they're pressed into the compact in a flower texture and pattern, all irregular. The first color is turquoise, the second color is a lavender, and the third is a pink. And its caption reads, Paul and Joe Beauty Eye Color CS and Artisan Fleuriste, $28, amazon.com/Paul and Joe. Below that is a tall, slim bottle with a pale pastel pattern on it. And its caption reads, SGX NYC Dry Touch Volumizing Dry Shampoo, $7, target.com. Below that is a nail polish bottle with a green pearly nail polish in it. Its tag reads, Chantical Celestial Nail Shear in Vega, $28, chantical.com. To the left of that is a round white bottle with a pink top. And its tag reads, Mega Babe Rosy Pits Daily Deodorant, $18, megababebeauty.com. Just above that is a white tube with a blue cap and some blue substance spilled behind it. And its tag reads, Philosophy Renewed Hope in a Jar Peeling Mousse, $35, sephora.com. And the final item on the page looks like a large dropper bottle with a milky white substance on it and a pink top. And its tag reads, Glossier Milky Oil, $12, glossier.com. And Brian Underwood comments on that product saying, Whisk away waterproof makeup and sunscreen without vigorous rubbing, courtesy of this oil-based remover that's fortified with soothing provitamin B5 and calming comfrey root. And the next page features a picture of sand. It's covering the entire page, and inside the sand is a long aqua blue bottle with a golden band around the middle of the bottle, just below the cap, and a beautiful little golden seal on it. And its caption reads, Facial sprays are known for their hydrating abilities, but Tatcha, the Satin Skin Mist, $48 at Tatcha.com, that's TATCHA.com, has superpowers. Spritz it on as the final step of your morning skincare routine, and the Japanese Okinawa clay and silk powder within work their magic, absorbing oil and creating a smooth canvas for foundation. You can also use the mist throughout the day to keep your makeup in place. Aside from a crisp Prosecco, it may be the only bottle you'll need this summer. And we have just enough time left in this episode to head to the reading room to read the review of Out of the Blue, A Father's Worst Nightmare Leads to an Exquisite Memoir. One ordinary spring day in 2015, a woman sat down on a bench near the corner of 75th Street and West End Avenue in Manhattan with her 2-year-old granddaughter, Greta. They were chatting about a play they'd seen the night before, a live-action version of the kids' show, Chuggington, when a brick fell from an 8th-floor windowsill, killing Greta. Yes, this is a true story. Once More We Saw Stars by Greta's dad, Jason Green, is the beautiful, brave chronicle of what came next, the reporters, the funeral, walking up steps on which her name was still scrawled in pink chalk. It's also about the moments leading up to that awful day. Lullabies, first words, first glimpses of a toddler's determined curiosity. Green writes, By the age of 2, your child is a person. She has opinions and fixed beliefs, preferences and tendencies. The 3 of you have inside jokes and shared understandings, and you speak in a family shorthand. This is his snapshot of that person and the warm, complicated, funny survivors left to walk through hell without her. You might assume you couldn't bear a book about a toddler dying, but Once More We Saw Stars is well worth the box of tissues you'll need while reading it. like the year of magical thinking, it's an undeniably heartbreaking journey. In fact, heartbreak is a featherweight word for the anguish here. But whether Green and his wife Stacy are plucking a parking ticket from their windshield on the day their daughter dies, or answering questions on a ludicrously one-size-fits-all organ donation form, was she sexually active? Did the patient ever use drugs? The two have an us-against-the-world sense of humor that offers a spark of hope from the start. They visit a medium, join a grief group where Jason picks a fight, go back to work too soon, do yoga, move, drink wine, a lot of wine, and plan for the future because they have to. They also tend to their relationship with Stacy's mom, Susan, who was with Greta on that bench and is, of course, traumatized. Wherever they go, there they are, a mom and a dad, very much in love, but suddenly childless. The very much in love part is what makes this book impossible to put down. The childless part is what makes it a song you couldn't forget if you tried. As Green himself says, grief at its peak has a terrible beauty to it, a blinding vision of every emotion. You'll find the whole gamut here, including joy. We've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope that you've enjoyed it. I'm Liz Elliott, reading for Susan Dellinger, and we both read for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138.